You may find it useful to glance at this piece of paper you're given on the way in. The service sheet on the reverse, you'll find some points that I'll be making over the next few minutes together. Well, do keep that passage open. Very important subject to take on board and to respond to personally, the issue of judgment. And I think the way that Jesus presents the teaching on judgment here, it's measured, it's thoughtful. I think often when the word judgment is used, we probably think sort of fire and brimstone and just things that we don't want anything to do with. Well, Jesus presents judgment in a very matter of fact. One day in the future, there will be a day when every member of humanity is held to account. And it makes sense. The creator of this world has the right to do with his creation, that is everybody that lives in it, and indeed the material that makes up the creation. The creator of the world has the right to do with his creation whatever he wants. Well, Jesus, the divine Son of the Father, explains here that judgment is his responsibility, that he will determine everybody's personal destiny. Nobody will miss out. There'll be those who've died, they'll be raised and made alive. People will be brought out of tombs. Those that have been cremated will be reconstituted. Those that have died at sea or perhaps in space will be gathered. Everyone will be there. Now, the immediate context, Jesus is speaking, as you'll know, we've been going through this super slowly. It's the last time we're doing this, by the way. We're speeding up after this and doing a chapter a week for the next 5 weeks, having done this chapter for 5 weeks. So we're taking a slightly different approach going forward, but it gives us an opportunity to really consider these subjects importantly. And of course, when it comes to the subject of judgment, the people that Jesus is speaking to, the Jewish authorities, they wouldn't have had a problem with the idea of judgment. It was expected. It was widely believed amongst all of the Jewish nation. I realize today that things are very different. To speak of a future day of judgment is considered abrasive and unwanted. It may be that you're sitting here today, having been invited along, or perhaps you've just joined us recently, and just thinking, this is the last thing I want to hear about. It's worth saying a few things on that. I mean, firstly, that the primary source of the teaching on judgment are Jesus' own words. They've been carefully recorded by a friend of his, John, the writer of the gospel, also a friend and disciple. And I'd like to suggest up front that far from being abrasive, these words of final judgment are actually really kind, even really loving. Let me try and illustrate what I mean by that. If you've ever seen the Christianity Explored material, I know lots of people have done that course. We encourage everybody to do it at some stage. Just a way of looking into the Christian faith, a little bit of Bible study, some short videos, and then a bit of discussion. And it's a really excellent way of sort of getting to meet Jesus personally. And there's this one little video towards the beginning of the course, looking at Jesus' identity. And anyway, the narrator is sort of walking along a beach, and this beach looks amazing. You know, it's beautiful, and water looks sort of inviting, and, you know, rolling waves. And he's just about to, the narrator is with a friend, just about to sort of take off his shirt and go for a swim, when his friend says, "Well, wait a second, haven't you seen the sign?" And he points then to a sign, and you see this rather sort of dramatic picture of a killer shark, and the sign just says, "Danger, don't swim, killer sharks." And then the friend says to the main sort of guy, "You've got to work out. I mean, is that sign trying to spoil your fun, or is it a helpful warning?" In terms of final judgment, I hope that you'll be convinced today that this is very much in the territory of loving warning. Jesus is not trying to spoil anybody's fun. So let's start with the opening sentence. I think in this little sort of pericope of writing, 24 to 29, it stands on its own and it stands out. You'll see verse 25, "Truly, truly, I say to you, an hour is coming and is now here." Truly, truly is like Jesus saying, look, pay very close attention. It doesn't say it many times in the gospel. When he does say it, you know that there's something very important coming up. "Truly, truly, I say to you, an hour is coming and is now here." That sounds a little bit confusing until you sort of break it down. An hour is coming. a reference to a point in time not yet realized. We'll call it Future Judgment Day. But then look how the sentence continues. And is now here. A clear opportunity, Jesus is saying, in the present, in the here and now, to prepare for that future day, to settle the outcome here and now. And so that statement, I think, then guides the whole sort of content of the text. We'll break it down according to those two statements. So you'll see the first point there, future judgment. Jesus speaks here of future judgment in terms of an hour. That's interesting, isn't it? Not a day, not a year, but a decisive, exact, and unavoidable time. The clocks of this age will stop. Everything that we know in this world will come to an end. If you like, the age in which we live now might be described as the age of making decisions. Every day we make decisions. But decision-making will come to an end. There won't be any opportunity for decision-making at this point. A new age will begin. It'll be the age of accountability, not decision-making. There'll be nothing hidden, nothing postponed. Everyone will be there. There's a famous story I came across as I was preparing. A lady by the name of Henriette Julianne Caroline von Ruling. Isn't that a great name? So this is Germany a few centuries ago. And she very sadly, she was the wife of a German government secretary. She very sadly died at a young age of a horrible illness. Anyway, she was preparing for her imminent death. I think she was in her 20s. And she gave very strict instructions because she was alarmed by the idea of final judgment. She didn't want to have anything to do with it. And so she wanted a tomb that was so heavy and so well sealed that nobody could ever get into it. And so she had these massive sort of heavy slabs of granite over her tomb in Hanover. And on the tombstone itself, it said this burial purchased for eternity must never be opened. Rather ironically, about 100 years later, a birch tree, sort of self-seeding tree, had started to grow up, got bigger and bigger, and the roots of this tree ended up breaking the tomb in half. And it's now apparently called the open tomb, which makes a rather ironic point. Anyway, however you look at all of that, Henriette Julianne Caroline von Ruling will be there too. So what do we know about this future judgment hour? Well, three subpoints that I put there on the handout. Firstly, Jesus is the judge. Everyone will be judged. There are only two outcomes. Jesus is the judge. And again, I think this is massively significant. Jesus is not speaking about this future judgment day in the abstract or detached terms. Look at verse 27. Jesus' words, and he, it's a reference to God the Father. God the Father has given him, that's a reference to Jesus himself, authority to execute judgment because he is the Son of Man. We see that Jesus is the judge here in at least two ways. First, because of the words he says. Look at that little phrase in the middle. Authority to execute judgment. Very carefully chosen words. Authority. If you've been given authority, it means that you have not just the right, but also the might. That's so important, isn't it? There are lots of sort of examples of authority in our world today where people are sort of in charge, but they can't actually do anything. Well, that's not the case with Jesus. He has the authority, so he has the right and the might. The right, the Godhead, Father, Son, and Spirit, have collectively agreed that the Son is in charge when it comes to judgment. Might. Executive power. We've seen it already. Think of the story that we've had in John 5. The man who'd been on his back for 38 years stands up with a word. He has authority. And then secondly, we also see that he's the judge by the title he uses. You see the end of verse 27. He does this little throwaway title of the Son of Man. Now, the Son of Man was a big figure in the Old Testament. Comes up a number of different places. I put one of those references in Daniel. Don't bother turning to it. You can sort of look it up if you want to sort of cross-check. But just listen to these words read from the book of Daniel. They're really powerful words. Daniel's talking about, it's a vision of the future, and Daniel's talking about a time in the future. Behold, with the clouds of heaven, there comes one like a son of man. And he comes to the Ancient of Days and was presented before him. And to him was given dominion. This is another word that makes the sort of the right of governing and controlling a prominent responsibility that Jesus has. So to him was given dominion and glory and a kingdom that all peoples, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away, and his kingdom one that shall not be destroyed. So, do you see, I mean, it was well known in the Old Testament that the Son of Man was this incredible, powerful figure that would be in charge of judgment. And as Jesus stands talking to the authorities, just a young man in his 30s, and he says, oh yeah, by the way, I'm that guy. That's a big thing to say, isn't it? I'm that guy that you've read about that's going to judge the world. It's so easy, I think, just to get people's true identity wrong, or to think you know somebody but not realize the full extent of the person to whom you're speaking. I'm sure we've all been in that sort of situation where you're having a conversation with someone and say, oh, wow, you're that guy. Anyway, one of my favorite stories in this front, it's from a bygone era, but it's a really, really good story. It's Charles Eliot. This is 1885, I think, something like that. He used to be the president of Harvard University. He was a busy man. I mean, you would be if you were running a sort of impressive institution like Harvard. And he was told by one of his assistants one day that a couple had come to see him because they wanted to speak about making a donation. They very sadly lost their 15-year-old son unexpectedly to typhoid, and they wanted to do something in his memory, and they suggested that they could help a little bit. Anyway, Charles Eliot, busy man, didn't really have time, but because he felt badly that this couple had lost his son, anyway, agreed to meet with them. During the conversation, the couple explained that they wanted to make something. Perhaps you have in mind, said Charles, a scholarship. The lady then said, well, we were thinking of something more substantial, actually, maybe a building. At which point Charles thought, there is no way that this couple, dressed as they are, speak as they do, could possibly be making it. Do you know how expensive buildings are around here? Anyway, long story short, he finished up the conversation, and off they went, and he was very grateful, but suggested that that they should keep their money or something like that. The couple felt a little bit dismissed. They went and spoke to other people. The next year, Eliot heard that this very down-to-earth couple had actually gone elsewhere and given a sum of money to buy not just a building, but a plot of land and a number of buildings. The sum of money that they gave back then, 1885, was $26 million. In today's money, that's $4 billion. They named the project Leyland Junior University. Today we call it Stanford. I think it's easy to overlook people, isn't it? Not realize quite what you're dealing with. Well, Charles Eliot learned his lesson then. Imagine how big Harvard would be now. Wouldn't even have the competition of Stanford. Anyway, what's important as far as we're concerned is what we make of Jesus. What do you make of Jesus? Kind and thoughtful teacher? Yeah, definitely that. A miracle worker, undoubtedly. The final judge of all humanity. Well, maybe that's a category you've been happy to ascribe, but do you realize that you will personally stand before this man and give an account of your life? Now, it's not surprising, is it, that as the Jewish authorities heard this, they were enraged. And as I said before, I mean, it's chapter 5 that we then get a straight line progression of ramped up oppression of Jesus that culminates in his death. That brings us to the second bullet point. Everybody will be judged. Look at verse 28. Do not marvel at this, for an hour is coming when all who are in their tombs will hear his voice. You see, nobody escapes the final reckoning. Everyone will be there. Middle of verse 28, all. Christians believe that history is teleological. That means it has an end. Okay, we don't believe in the sort of reincarnation, round and round, sort of lion, king, circle of life sort of stuff. That's Hollywood. It's not Christianity. Christianity is teleological. It has an end. And that means it has a purpose. You don't have an end to something if there's not a purpose. That's how God designed the world. And here we get the first phase of that purpose being brought to fruition in Jesus' words. The dead will be raised. Everyone will be there. It'll be the perfect example, perhaps the first time ever, of complete inclusion. Not even death lets you off the hook. There's a story I read. It's a serious subject. I was trying to sort of have a few things that just helped us to have a few sort of moments of breathing in a very serious subject. I don't want to lose the seriousness of it. But this entertained me a little bit. I hope it does for you too. A chap called William Claude Fields. He's often known as W.C. Fields. He was an actor and writer and an atheist. He was a well-known atheist. And he dismissed the idea of judgment, but was increasingly sort of disturbed by the idea of judgment. And a friend found him sort of thumbing through the Bible one day and said, "What are you doing? You're an atheist. Why are you wasting your time on the Bible?" And he said, "Well, I'm worried about judgment, and I'm looking for loopholes." Well, I mean, the simple reality is there's no wriggle room. Nobody escapes. Everyone will be judged. Everyone will be there. That brings us to the final bullet point there. There are only two outcomes. Do not marvel at this, for an hour is coming when all who are in the tombs will hear his voice and come out, those who've done good to the resurrection of life, those who've done evil to the resurrection of judgment. So we're at that point in time in the future where we've all been issued with a new body. Then there's a separation, a division. Two destinations, resurrection of life and resurrection of judgment. A reference to heaven and the new creation, and also a reference to judgment, condemnation, or sometimes described by Jesus as hell. But the point here is there are only two outcomes. There's no sort of neutral territory. One of the most common responses that I get when I speak about Christianity here within the city, especially as I get invited into speaking different firms and things around here, one of the kickbacks that I often hear is people say, "Well, you know, it's all very interesting, and you know, I'm very pleased for you and other Christians, but I'm just not interested, and it's got nothing to do with me. You know, it's just don't worry me about this." People sort of think there's an opt-out category. But there isn't. You can't opt out. To say that something isn't true doesn't mean that it's not true. Which is why the second and final point, more briefly, is absolutely crucial. The verdict we receive at this future hour of judgment, it's almost like Jesus is sort of gently and lovingly encouraging people to respond now. He's saying, "Look, the verdict you receive then can be settled today. You don't have to sort of wait and sort of think, oh, you know, what's going to happen? Am I in? Am I out? Sort it out today. Be absolutely certain today." That's what Jesus is saying. That's why I think this is such a loving warning. Verse 25, "Truly, truly, I say to you, an hour is coming and is now here." Is now here, Jesus says. "When the dead will hear the voice of the Son of God, those who hear will live." We don't have to wait. We can listen today. How amazing that the age of opportunity, the age of decision-making still exists. We're now 2,000 years closer than we were, or at least that they were back in Jesus' day, but it is still here. It's now here, the verdict for eternity, that one day you individually will be given, can be settled today. You don't need to wait. That's just so great, isn't it? How? That's the key question. How? We've got to hope the Lord Jesus doesn't come back and wind things up before I finish explaining this, okay? How? There's about a minute left. Listening to and trusting the words that Jesus says. Listening to and trusting the words that Jesus says. Obviously, it's got to be more than just listening. Anyone can listen. It's trusting. And I think that's why Jesus uses a concept that can be a little bit confusing. Verse 29, "Those who've done good, resurrection of life. Those who've done evil, resurrection of judgment." Those who've done good. Jesus is not introducing a new category of suddenly go off and do lots of good things. Doing good very simply means listening, trusting, honoring Jesus. When you've done that, your life then lines up with Jesus and his word. You see, he alone offers a free pardon on Judgment Day. He alone has done everything necessary for us. He alone took the hit that we deserve. Nobody can escape judgment, but we can depend on somebody that's taken judgment for us. Not long after, the conversation that Jesus has with the authorities, well, as I've already suggested, the ramped up oppression of Jesus and persecution led to his arrest, his false accusation, and his death on the cross. On the cross, he would take the hit of God's judgment in history for all who would believe in him. And so that means if I side with Jesus today by listening to his words, if I decide to line up with Jesus and find safety in him, that's what it means to do good. Well, then I can be absolutely confident today of the outcome in the future. There's that wonderful story. You may have heard it before. I think it's a really good illustration of this. It's apparently a big fire swept through one of the American national parks. I think it was Yellowstone Park. And after the fire swept through, the firefighters sort of went through the park to survey the fire, to survey the damage, and they found this charred remains of a lot of things, but particularly they spotted a quite large eagle that had sort of put out one of her wings. And as they looked more closely and lifted up this charred remains of this eagle, they found chicks alive underneath. It's a wonderful sort of picture of sort of fire sweeping through, and then these little chicks protect it. Now, I did a bit of research because I've heard this story said a few times. You may have heard it before as well. So it's a great story. I don't think it's true, sadly. Okay, I tried to find the provenance of it, and lots of people say, yes, it's fiction. But here's the thing, it doesn't matter, because the illustration works, and the illustration wonderfully makes the point. One day, when judgment comes, as judgment, if you like, engulfs the whole of this world, there's one safe place. The safe place is with the man who's already faced that judgment. Because we've all got to face it. We all fall short. Nobody makes the standards. But Jesus took the hit. If we side with him, we can be safe. So, where does this leave us? There's an old hymn. We haven't sung it here, but it captures this so beautifully. On him, that is Jesus, mighty vengeance fell, which would have sunk a world to hell. He bore it for a chosen race, and thus becomes our hiding place. It's wonderful truth. It's accessible today. You don't have to do incredible things and jump through hoops to impress God. You'll never do it. You side with Jesus. He took the hit. Safety and absolute assurance, therefore, that we can be safe on that final day. So in conclusion, I mean, we need to hear this, don't we? We really need to hear this. So what about you, individually, today? There is still hope. There's hope for us. There's hope for those that we know, those that we work with. You know, the people that you work with, I don't know if you've ever considered this, the people that you work with are the most blessed, fortunate, lucky people to have ever lived because they work with somebody that knows what's going to happen in the end. You have, through these words that Jesus gave, you have insight into what will happen to every member of humanity. There is hope, because as of today, the clocks have not stopped. There is still time. And Jesus is in the business of giving life. That is what he cares about, life. That's why this is so loving. This is such a concerned and loving warning. Future judgment can be settled today. Why don't I just pause, think about personal implications, perhaps a decision that needs to be made by you, perhaps implications for those that we know and care for. Just a moment, and then I'll pray. Jesus says, an hour is coming and is now here. Heavenly Father, please impress upon us afresh the importance of standing with Jesus. And I pray that you'll give us the ability to do that and the motivation to tell others. In Jesus' name.